This is Connected to Chicago with Bill Cameron.
What's going on in Chicago? What the hell is going on?
Covering the big ideas.
If you do not feel well, for God's sake, stay home. Save lives.
The tough choices.
Guacamole? No, I like guacamole.
And the only three ways a Chicago alderman leaves the city council.
The ballot box, jury box, or the pine box.
Now, Bill Cameron.
Dick Durbin is here. He's the senior senator from Illinois, the number two Democrat in the Senate, and in a new job as chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Dick, welcome back.
Thanks, Bill. Good to be with you.
Well, we're Joe Biden 100 days into the White House. Any surprises or disappointments so far?
Well, pleasant surprises. He inherited the vaccines from the previous administration, and they deserve credit. Warp Speed and all the scientists that went to work to do it. But they didn't leave with a plan on how to administer them to America. And so when Biden took office, you know, 2 or 3 million people had been vaccinated. They had to put together a logistical plan to reach, have available vaccines all across America. They did it. Their goal was 100 million inoculations by the first 100 days. They hit 200 million, and we're hoping there'll be even more. So I would give Joe Biden credit for tackling the number one issue facing America effectively. Secondly, I think his rescue plan, which unfortunately we couldn't get a single Republican to join us, but his rescue plan sent $1,400 checks to families to help them get through, extended unemployment benefits, helped businesses borrow money so they could stay open or reopen. So I think all those things are very positive.
Now, Donald Trump has not been in the White House for 100 days. How's that been for you?
What a relief. I mean, from my point of view, we're back to a sane, credible, dignified presidency. We don't have three tweets in the middle of the night insulting people and making wild claims. We're reestablishing our alliances around the world of countries that will stand by us and we'll stand by them to make sure our security is intact. We've got a president who operates like a president. And to me, it's a great relief.
Do you expect Trump to be a big presence in the 2022 elections and perhaps run for president again himself?
I think he's going to try to maintain a presence. I don't think his own view of himself is capable of stepping back off stage in any respect. And so he'll inject himself into primaries. He'll try to beat people, Republicans who are critical of him, and support those who happen to like him. It remains to be seen. The Republican Party has to decide what's its future and fate. Was it defined by the insurrection mob on January 6th, or is it going to be defined by traditional values and new leadership?
I see the New York Times has the price tag for the two programs Biden is proposing up to near $6 trillion. You know, when you and I were growing up in East St. Louis, we thought $1,000 was a lot of money. And then we started seeing government spending $1 million for something. Then along came Ev Dirksen, who said, a billion here, a billion there. We're talking about real money. Now we're spending trillions and want to spend trillions more. Help me get my head around these price tags.
Let me tell you, Bill, I also remember when we were growing up about the same time in that area of the state, there was people talking about this Dwight David Eisenhower program of an interstate highway system. And folks weren't quite sure we needed that. Hell, we had highways already. What's this all about? You're going to build some new ones? And what was the price tag on that thing? What are you talking about? Look what it did to America. It literally changed America and put our economy on a fast track for reuniting this country in a common economic effort, creating jobs in the process, building new businesses. Where would we be without it? What I've got to say is this. Joe Biden's got some big ideas and some bold ideas. America needs it. If we're going to lead the world, continue to lead the world, the 21st century, it isn't with small ideas and small plans. It's a president who says, I'm going to build a workforce that is trained and ready for the 21st century so that they can get good-paying jobs and raise their family just like their parents and grandparents.
Now, the Republicans are making fun of what you guys call human infrastructure. They say they're all for roads and bridges and ports and sewers and airports and even broadband. But there's no way they're going to join to pay for what you guys call human infrastructure. Are they going to be able to block you on infrastructure?
They're going to try. As I said, there wasn't a single Republican vote for the American Rescue Plan. We passed it anyway by reconciliation. But let's put it in perspective. Let's say we end up creating a great company that's going to hire people and pay a decent wage, a good wage that you can raise a family on. And let's say we're going to go out and build a highway right up to it, four-lane highway, so there's no question about whether you can get to work. And then the mother and father are sitting there and saying, all right, we're ready to go. Oh, one last thing. What about daycare? What are we going to do with our kids? And that's a real human concern. That's human infrastructure, just like education and training. Making sure that families have a way to take a job and to be safe and comfortable in knowing that their kids are in a safe place they can afford, that isn't something that is extraneous. That is essential to the job decision to go forward. Now, I think Biden's right. Let's take a look at the human side of this. And the fact of the matter is, Bill, we're living in a society where we need more and more caregivers. Caregivers for those little kids, preschool, caregivers for disabled folks, caregivers for our parents and grandparents who are getting up in years. I mean, that's a real life concern, and people have to factor that into a lot of decisions they make. And when Joe Biden's talking about that, he's talking about the reality of what challenges that families face.
But how do we pay for it, Dick?
Well, the point is, if we get that family working, paying taxes, that's what makes this economy work. So building good jobs, good paying jobs that compete successfully around the world builds a tax base in this country. The exact opposite is true, too. Underutilizing the talent of America means that we end up having a government help when people should be in good jobs that they want to be in, making a paycheck and paying their own taxes.
And I see Biden wants to take the tax rate back up to 39% on the really rich people, the billionaires. I thought it was a sure dunk that Pritzker's referendum on a graduated income tax to make the rich pay more was a sure bet. But it turned out that Illinois voters just don't trust Springfield. And so while I think it's an easy thing politically to soak the rich, I'm having the same doubts about whether Congress will go along with taxing the rich to pay for this stuff. What do you think?
Well, I don't think it's unfair. And you know, Biden has created a high bar here. If you're making less and your family's making less than $400,000, he says, I'm not going to raise your taxes. Well, that takes 99% of the families across America out of the equation. He's talking about the top 1%. And, you know, when you take a look at it here, these folks have done quite well living in America and being part of America. And asking them to pay back a little so that others have a chance to succeed in their lives is not unreasonable. When 50 families in America in the last year are making more money than half the American workers, I should say have more wealth than more than half the American workers, we can't just keep talking about income inequality. We've got to do something about it. And asking the very, very wealthy and successful to pay their fair share, I've never hesitated to do it.
Now, it seems like not a week goes by, but we have another mass shooting. And, of course, the police killing of especially black and brown people is a weekly headline. In your Judiciary Committee, what are you trying to do to face these two issues?
Well, I can tell you it is front and center with a major concern of the Congress in light of what happened with George Floyd and the trial in Minnesota of the policeman. And there is an effort underway, and I've got a very positive feeling about it. It's being headed up by Cory Booker, a Democratic senator from New Jersey, who chairs my subcommittee on crime in the Senate Judiciary Committee, and Tim Scott. Tim, of course, African-American Republican senator from South Carolina. He and Booker have sat down together, and they asked me to join the effort. There are right now about six or seven of us who are part of it. I think we can put together a bill. We met yesterday, and Tim Scott's office day after he gave the national speech and started outlining the 5, 6, 7 things that we think really need to be done. We're darn close, very close. I'm not going to assume a success, but I have a positive feeling that over the next 2 or 3 weeks, we could come up with a good bill on policing that respects the fact that policemen and women risk their lives when they go out on the streets, but also that some of the things that we've seen are just absolutely unacceptable in terms of police conduct. We have got to be able to try to find a way to balance those things.
Well, on your list of 7 items, what are the top 1 or 2 effective ones for which there is consensus?
Well, some of them are pretty obvious. Chokeholds, for example. We see that more and more. We saw it with George Floyd. Dramatic limitation on the use of chokeholds. And that, I think, is not a bad idea. It's a good idea. And policemen are telling us it's manageable. No-knock warrants. Breonna Taylor down in Louisville, Kentucky. They started shooting rounds into her apartment and killed this innocent woman in her own bedroom in her apartment with a no-knock warrant. That has to be very limited and carefully administered if we're going to have any future. A couple issues. One of them is called qualified immunity. And what it boils down to this is this. If a policeman does the wrong thing, and ends up being criminally convicted for what they did, and it's happened, it's happening right now in Minnesota, what civil obligation is owed to the family of the victim? George Floyd's case, he lost his life. Others are severely injured or paralyzed. Right now, there is virtually no way for that family to go to court and recover for the injured, innocent person. And so qualified immunity is the way that they avoid civil liability. We are talking about how we can hold the police responsible on a civil basis for the damages that have occurred because of their wrongdoing. And that's the trickiest one. It's a hard one, but we're working on that as well.
Now, not even Sandy Hook produced common sense gun control. Are you trying for gun control in this Congress?
Bill, I'm trying all I can. I mean, we talk about mass shootings, and the honest, heartbreaking answer is there's a, quote, mass shooting, unquote, every weekend in the city of Chicago. That means more than 4 people were injured in a gun incident. Now, it might be spread around the neighborhoods, as we know, but hardly a weekend never goes by without at least 4 people being shot and maybe as many being killed in the process. So, yes, I take this personally. And we've got 2 or 3 provisions. I have to tell you, they're not what I believe is sufficient to deal with the issue, but they are at least a step forward. And I'm encouraging through the Judiciary Committee and individual members of the Senate, strike up these bipartisan conversations, see if we can find some common ground. The effort's underway.
And those efforts are what, perhaps background checks?
Background checks. That's where we start. Everybody says, oh, sure, I agree with it. We shouldn't give a felon a gun, a convicted felon a gun, and it certainly shouldn't give a gun to a mentally unstable person. Well, that's the basis for the background checks. And people avoid those background checks by going to gun shows, for example, and buying firearms, even in volume, without any background check on the person, the purchaser. That's got to come to an end.
And any other thing?
Well, there are other things. For example, the emergency red flag order, they call it. Just recently, we had an individual in Indianapolis who had been reported by his mother the year before saying, I think he wants death by cop. In other words, he's going to go out with a gun and get in a situation that looks like he's threatening a policeman in the hopes that he'll be killed. And they ended up coming and taking the gun away, but they didn't follow through. 2 or 3 months later, he bought 2 more guns, and then he turned loose on a FedEx facility just a couple weeks ago and killed 8 innocent people. Give me these red flag orders out there so that we say to folks, they're at a moment in life where they're not trustworthy and stable to own a firearm, and we've got to make sure they can't purchase one and don't have one. That's another thing we're discussing.
We're talking issues with Senator Dick Durbin. Dick, Lakeshore Drive is world-renowned in Chicago, but down at City Hall, we have Alderman moving to change it to celebrate Jean-Baptiste Pointe du Sable, the founder of Chicago. Rename Lakeshore Drive for du Sable. Is this such a good idea?
I got a conflict of interest bill. We have a place on Lakeshore Drive, up around Belmont, and but notwithstanding that, that is a local decision to be made by the city council. I'm not going to interject myself into it. I believe that proper respect should be shown to those trustworthy founders of our cities and states, and I'm going to leave it to the city to make that decision.
Let the record show, Durbin ducked.
Exactly.
Two more aldermen have been indicted this week. One is the nephew of Mayor Daley. I don't want you to defend them, and they're innocent until proven guilty, but it's the latest example of the stubborn, persistent problem of cases of political corruption. Any new ideas about how we prevent this?
Well, all I can say is I was raised in this business and trained by two Senators Paul Douglas, Paul Simon, who believed in full income disclosure, in detailed net worth disclosure every single year. I've followed that standard in the hopes that people, even if they think I've got the craziest political judgment, will at least say he's an honest guy. You know, and anything I've managed to make or save, my wife and I, we've disclosed it completely, and that's the way it ought to be. I'm for full disclosure. I hope every level of government does it, and then that, I think, will discourage some of the activity that's been alleged.
The census numbers are out. We're losing a member of Congress, going down to 17. Why is it, do you think, this exodus of population has occurred that creates yet another loss of a congressional seat?
Well, it's complicated. One of the newspapers in town likes to say, well, it's because the politicians won't follow our philosophy. That's why everybody's leaving. Well, I think that's an oversimplification. It comes down to birth rates. And we're seeing a birth rate decline across America in most places. And so the population isn't growing as fast as it once was. And secondly, we've cut off immigration, people coming into this country to work. It's been restricted more than it was in the past. And then there are other elements. I mean, we have people who are picking up and leaving to be closer to their grandkids. You know, that is just a fact of life. I understand that. And there are factors that I won't deny in our state that are worrying people. Property taxes are higher than most people would like to see them, and I'm one of them. And secondly, the pension systems are perilous. And dealing with that is a challenge, not just for us, but for future generations. But I'll tell you this, the bottom line, and I sound like a cheerleader here, it's a great state. I'm proud to be part of it and represent it. I think we have seen people come and go in the past, and we've ended up stronger when it is all said and done, and I think that's going to happen again.
How much clout will Illinois lose in Washington with the loss of yet another seat?
Still going to have two senators, and I've seen every 10 years we've lost one congressional seat. I wish that were not the case. But I might remind you, surprise, surprise, California is losing a congressional seat, too. So every state has to deal with the reality that people are going to make decisions where they want to live.
You suggested months ago that Mike Madigan should bow out as party chairman. He did that and also bowed out as Speaker of the House. What effect have you seen so far politically with the absence of Mike Madigan?
Well, I can tell you the new leaders, the new Speaker of the House and the new chairman of the Democratic Party in Illinois, I really think are talented and come to the job with exceptional qualifications. As far as the state party is concerned, Congresswoman Robin Kelly, she has the right personality to lead our party statewide, and she is generating more excitement and energy into that effort than I've seen in a long, long time. It's good for the party, and I think ultimately good for our state.
And when they draw the fair maps, which is kind of a hilarious term because nobody really wants fair maps, but when they do, which district should be combined with another based upon the population trends that you see so far? Is it a Republican district or a Democratic district? How do you do these maps fairly?
So I'm going to lay it on the line to you, Bill. In 1982, when there was a reapportionment map drawn, it was drawn by the Democrats. It created a congressional district that I had a chance to win. and I won by a couple thousand votes over an incumbent Republican congressman. They drew the map, so I had a chance to win. In 1992, the tables were turned, and Dennis Hastert was a leader on the Republican side to try to take away my district and to beat me in the election, and I barely won. And then I went over to the Senate. And it goes back and forth like that, depending on whether the Democrats or Republicans have the upper hand at the time. The problem we have now, the problem that they face in Washington now, is the census figures they're getting from Washington to build these maps are not going to be finalized until the end of September. Under Illinois election law, we start collecting petition signatures in September for the election in 2022. So they have a timetable that is literally impossible for finalized figures. So the question is, will they go forward with preliminary figures? How will they do it? Tough challenge, because the census wasn't taken as it should have been in a timely fashion.
Should we be going with a so-called independent commission down the road?
Listen, if every state in the union said, let's go independent commission, I think it makes sense. But if you say, well, just the blue states will do independent commissions, I got a problem with that. You know, the bottom line is, I think commissions are fair if they're done on a national basis. If they're done with just Democrats leading the effort, we're going to end up being fair to Republicans in some states and unfair to Democrats in most others.
Now, for folks who want to visit Washington, Senator, paint the picture of what security looks like these days around the Capitol, and is it worth even making the trip?
It's depressing as hell, Bill. I can recall when you could drive up to the steps of the Capitol and walk in from your car, and now we have two or three levels of perimeter around it, fencing and guards and National Guard, and I want to salute the Illinois National Guardsmen who are out in Washington keeping us safe. But we need it. After January 6th, when that mob turned away from the Trump rally and marched on the Capitol, it was disgusting, shameful, and deadly. Five people lost their lives, and 140 law enforcement officers were attacked by that mob. And I'm making no excuses. That was just unacceptable and should be condemned by Democrats and Republicans alike. But it's the reality. It's the reality of what we face with domestic terrorism, white supremacy, white nationalism terrorists. And whether you're a terrorism on the left or the right, as far as I'm concerned, you've got no place in this democracy. And violence is unacceptable.
So is that trip worth making?
At this point, I'd have to caution people, you won't get to see much, and certainly won't get inside many of the buildings that you want to see.
Too bad. That's Senator Dick Durbin. Dick, thanks, as always, for being with us.
Thanks, Bill. Go Flyers.
There you go. That's East St. Louis, Eastside High School he's talking about. After a break, our roundtable with Lynn Sweet, Ray Long, Greg Hines, and Heather Sharon.
This is Connected to Chicago with Bill Cameron. A look at the top stories of the week with the people making, covering, and talking about the news of the day. Podcasts are available online at WLSAM.com. Now, Bill Cameron.
Time for the roundtable, where we just get to tell the truth with Lynn Sweet of the Sun-Times. She covers Washington. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, everyone.
Ray Long of the Tribune. Hey, Ray.
Hey, Bill.
Greg Hines of Cranes. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Bill.
And Heather Sharon of WTTW. Hey, Heather.
Hey, Bill.
Heather, two more aldermen got indicted this week. One present alderman, one former alderman. Tell us about Mayor Daley's nephew and the first Mayor Daley's grandson, Patrick Daley Thompson.
Yes, he was hit with seven federal charges yesterday involving taxes that he filed incorrectly and a loan that he took out from a Bridgeport bank that failed in 2017. The indictment alleges that he took this loan out and only made one payment on it, but then claimed on his taxes that he had paid interest on the loan and took that deduction. So that is frowned upon by both the Internal Revenue Service and federal prosecutors. So So now he is headed to court in the next couple of weeks to enter a plea. Yesterday, through his attorney, Patrick Daley Thompson said that he was innocent and that it was simply a matter of an error that he made in his recollection of this loan that he took out, and an error made in tax preparation. And I would be completely remiss if I did not credit the astounding work of Sun Times reporter Tim Novak, who broke the story of the Bridgeport Bank that failed Washington Federal Savings that led to yesterday's indictment. And I think we can probably all agree that regardless of the outcome of the court case, it is another indication that the Daley era in Chicago politics is one of the past.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. The other alderman is a former alderman, Rick Munoz, who spent 25 years in the city council as a leading Latino alderman. He's accused of stealing from his own fellow progressives in the city council. He was a treasurer of their political action fund, and this indictment says that Munoz moved thousands of dollars from there to his own political fund and then to his own personal bank account, then lied about it. The feds say he spent the money on jewelry and clothing and cell phones, tickets to sporting events, vacations, a relative's college tuition, even a lover's lane spot in the suburbs. I think this one is, in a way, more outrageous, Greg, than even Patrick Daley Thompson, because he's stealing from his own brethren.
Hey, it's, you know, it's kind of sad. I mean, Rick is he's a very personable guy. I think we all got along with him. He's one of the people you could always talk to at the city council when he was there to try to off the record to find out what was really going on. But he clearly had some personal problems with the liquid libations that mix into here somewhere. Where that fit in, I don't know. But they're just – I don't know what they need to do at City Hall – just to finally convince people that if you don't become an alderman, it's not a one-way ticket to the federal pen. I mean, what does it take to get people to do the job? And be honest, it just, it's gone on for generations, and however many people they throw in the clink, there seem to be new volunteers every election.
He was even a reformed street gang member, but obviously not fully reformed. Ray, were you surprised to hear that A. Daley got indicted?
Well, you know, it's kind of inevitable. If you just keep electing somebody from the same family over and over and over, something's going to go wrong somewhere along the line, because somebody who doesn't appreciate the family legacy is going to take advantage of it. And if this is indeed all going to come out true and indeed he is guilty of these charges, then it's just a real stain on the Daley family. You know, a lot of people have not been big fans of the Daleys, but there have been a lot of people here in town who still admired them. And so it is a real setback to the Daley legacy. It's a real setback to see an heir of two mayors be indicted.
I think it's even more than a setback to the legacy. This is the last hurrah moment, I think, for the dynasty, to be perfectly blunt about it. Thompson was the only member of the third generation who really was politically active to any significant degree. At one point, he even bought Richard J. Daley's old bungalow in Bridgeport, kind of to make the point that they keep an eye on me. I'm moving up. Well, he didn't move up very far, and after this, he'll be lucky to keep what he has, although he has proclaimed his innocence. But, you know, after what happened to Bill Daley, when in the last grasp to kind of put the old gang back together in City Hall last time, where he got beat by the Joyces, of all people, a Southwest Side feud, took away enough votes to keep him from getting the job. This on top of it, you know, no family has dominated the town as much as this family did for 70 years, but this appears to be the final chapter.
Yeah, Mayor Daley's got to be wincing about this. Hey, Lynn, just before we're talking here on Friday afternoon, Sherry Bustos, the Northwest Illinois congresswoman, had a big announcement. What is it?
Well, she did. Bustos of Moline announced that she will not run for re-election after five terms. Now, this isn't really, in some ways, a big surprise. She won by her slimmest margin of her five House races in 2020, and the but she has the distinction at the same time of being one of the few House Democrats who has ever who was able to win twice in the district that won for Donald Trump. But she would have had a rougher time. We have a remap going on in the state, and she would have, you know, had a fight to make her district as Democratic as possible. And, you know, we are going to lose. This is, I think, happened since we talked last time. News came out that Illinois for sure will be losing a seat in the remap, and I think that with Democratic map makers will one way or the other keep their thumbs on the scale. They'll do their best to make sure it's a Republican seat that's lost. She still had to jostle with some other Democrats to make sure that she would have made whatever is the redrawn district as Democratic as possible. Her statement says that she, every decade she likes to think about doing something new. One other footnote, at one time she was seen as a possible candidate for senator-governor, maybe even for the highest ranks of leadership in the House. She had a disappointing run as the chair of the House Political Committee, and I think that kind of derailed her for the highest posts in the House.
Heather, I saw Bustos chatting up Joe Biden on the floor of the House on Wednesday night after his big speech. And hearing this news, I'm wondering if he's not prepared to bring her on the payroll at the White House somewhere in some place in the administration. What do you think?
Well, that's certainly the benefit of having a Democratic administration when you decide to leave elected office. The potential stepping stones are far greater than they were, you know, just 100 days ago when Donald Trump was in office. It'll be interesting to see how this changes the remap effort that Lynn mentioned. That district is going to be really difficult for Democrats to hold on to, which means that not only will Illinois lose a congressional seat, but it could close that gap between the Democratic delegation and the Republican delegation, maybe by a seat, which is interesting since Illinois is now a deep blue state.
Ray, you've watched a lot of remaps with all these developments. How do you think it shakes out to get down to 17 districts?
Well, I think it's real interesting because over the years that Mike Madigan was the Speaker of the House and in charge of redistricting, even though some of the deals were cut and brought to him, the Democrats turned a state that had more Republican seats into a state that has much more Democratic seats. Like Lynn said, 13 to 5. He was at one time declared after the last remap, you know, somebody who ought to be in the remapping Hall of Fame for the congressional turnout, the numbers that came up and the maps that he drew for the Democrats. And so it's a real issue now as to whether they will be able to do the same kind of dance in Springfield to help and carve up the map so that Democrats will still be able to hold on to 13 seats. They'll want to hold on to a 13-4 delegation if they can, or put together a 13-4 delegation. And they have an inexperienced crew in Springfield to carve those maps, so there's going to be some interesting cartography that goes on.
Hey, Lynn, how true do you think
it
is?
Hold on. This just in, as we speak, the woman who almost beat Sherry in 2020, Esther King, now she came real close. Bustos won 52-48. She just announced that she's already going to run for that seat, whatever it looks like. She's announcing today. So I'm sorry, Bill. What was your question?
I was wondering how true it is that Rahm Emanuel is about to become ambassador to Japan.
We've been reporting that he has been in the pipeline to be an ambassador, and I think the reports that he's headed to Japan are pretty good. Biden has been taking his time on the ambassadorial appointments, wanting to do some of the other ones first, and I think, Ram, when it comes out, it'll be part of a group of ambassadors. You know, his name has been mentioned along with Cindy McCain, for one, who also seems destined for an ambassadorship, the rare Republican so far to get an appointment by Biden.
Yeah, I'm hearing, Bill, too, that this is pretty likely. Rahm, I think, would have preferred to be in China, which is going to be a much more interesting place, a more powerful place, and Rahm always likes to go with the action. But the one that appears to be in the cards at the moment is Japan, and it looks like a pretty good bet from what I'm hearing.
So Rambo's going to be a diplomat, Ray? What do you think? Is that possible?
Yeah, don't set me up like that, Bill. You know, this guy will...
He's going to have to learn some Japanese cuss words, that's all.
Yeah, he may want to try to put a cap on that finger that he's got shorted. But the deal is that he has the skills to make things happen if he determines to do it. He's obviously a robust guy who wants to do a lot of things and likes to be in charge and likes to get things done. So if he can pull it off and he can do great things over there, you know, what it's one of these things that puts him back in the driver's seat of being powerful and putting another notch on his resume, and who knows what he'll try to do from there.
Hey, Heather, another round of hard-to-watch police body cam video this week. This time it's Anthony Alvarez, 22 years old, being chased down by a police officer. He apparently has a gun in his hand, but gets rid of it before the officer notices and gets shot by the officer, and he's dead. Where is all this leading, Heather?
Well, I think it's a real problem for Mayor Lori Lightfoot, who, of course, was elected on her credentials as a police reformer. And I think it really complicates efforts that have been underway for as far back as I can remember to improve relations between the police department and the community, to rebuild that trust is something that we hear from both Lightfoot and Superintendent David Brown. And this makes it that much harder because there are a lot of questions about whether the shooting was justified. And of course, at the end of this, we have a 22-year-old man who, you know, had a 2-year-old daughter and friends and family who loved him, who is dead, even though he did not point a gun at police officers and he appears to be fleeing, according to the footage that we have. So there are a lot of questions, and I think it will only increase the pressure that the mayor feels to come up with some sort of compromise measure to put a civilian elected board in charge of the Chicago Police Department. It will also ratchet up the pressure on the independent monitor that's implementing the federal court order that requires the department to reform. I should mention that we also know that the Civilian Office of Police Accountability finally finished their probe into the Anjanette Young raid, the one where the social worker was left naked and begging for help because police were in the wrong apartment. That probe found nearly 100 instances of misconduct by nearly a dozen officers. So that is now on Superintendent Brown's desk, and he will have to make that decision as well as deciding whether to strip the officer involved in the Alvarez shooting of his police power, as recommended by the Civilian Police Oversight Agency.
I think they got to do something real about police foot chases, because that's a common element in so many of these cases. Greg, you were writing this week that the Bears conspicuously were not denying that they were thinking about the Arlington Park site for a football stadium. And that led to Mayor Lightfoot quickly acknowledging that she's been talking to the Bears brass about what they need to stay at Soldier Field. What's this all about?
And so it's back to the future time, Bill. If you remember, we went through this drill about 25 years ago before the lease was signed at Soldier Field. What this is about is that Soldier Field is, frankly, subpar by NFL standards. It's small. It has limited signage. It doesn't have all the bells and whistles that the new stadiums have. It doesn't have the skyboxes or whatever. And at the same time, the people who own Arlington Track have it up for sale, you know, which with the clear possibility it will be demolished. That's a whole bunch of free property, not free, but cleared space that's available in an area not too far out of town where a lot of Bears fans happen to live. So now we're going to find out. Are the Bears serious about going up there? Are they willing to put up the money that it would take to actually build a stadium of their own money? Or are they merely using that reality as kind of a leverage point to get a little more out of the city, maybe better terms at Soldier Field? What exactly is going on, I'm not completely sure yet, but the fact that the mayor conceded that she's talked to high-level people, and I understand she talked to one of the McCaskies, tells you that there's some pretty serious smoke in the air.
That's Greg Hines of Cranes. Thanks to him, to also Lynn Sweet of the Sun-Times, Ray Long of the Tribune, and Heather Sharon of WTTW. Up next, Kim Gordon.
This is Connected to Chicago. Podcasts are available online at WLSAM.com.
Another sign the summer will look a little more normal. Navy Pier has reopened. Joining me is Communications Director Payal Patel. Payal, welcome to Connected to Chicago.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. So good news, the pier is reopening in a phased-in plan. So tell me what we can expect to see and what won't be open in phase one.
Sure. So on Friday, April 30th, Navy Pier will phase into its reopening, restoring public access to select outdoor spaces and attractions. And so what people can expect access to are Polk Brothers Park, the park out in the front, North and South Docks. You can take a stroll down the pier again, enjoy those spectacular views. Pier Park, which will include select rides and attractions. And those weren't available last year during our reopening, and so we're excited to bring the rides and attractions back. And then East End Plaza, tour boats and cruises, the new Sable Hotel, of course, and select restaurants at limited capacity.
So tell me a little bit about this new hotel. It's very exciting, and it's the first time there's ever been a hotel people can actually stay overnight at Navy Pier. What does it bring to Navy Pier? How's it going to enhance the experience?
Well, we had envisioned the ability to extend people's experiences overnight. And that's essentially what Sable at Navy Pier will allow our guests to be able to do. So now you can spend the day enjoying all of the incredible rides, experiences, and attractions across the entire pier. You can dine at the pier. You can be entertained at the pier. And now you can stay overnight at the pier. And so, you know, people will be able to go to sleep to incredible views and wake up to incredible views. There's 223 rooms with ceiling-to-floor windows, and there's not a bad view in sight. And, of course, with our fireworks coming back, that'll also be such a great place to enjoy the fireworks from.
And I know that you all had some job fairs a month or so ago. Are you still looking for seasonal workers?
Yeah, we had a job fair to hire seasonal workers for frontline positions in our guest experience department. So those were our ride operators, other types of roles that are public-facing, our social distancing ambassadors. While that job fair did allow us to fill many of those positions, we are still looking for a few more. And so anyone who's interested is welcome to go to navypier.org and submit an application, and the peer team will be in touch.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. We're excited to get back out to the pier.
Thanks so much for having me. We can't wait.
That's our show for this week. Thanks to Matt Mellon for production assistance. I'm Bill Cameron, WLS News.
Connected to Chicago with Bill Cameron, a production of WLS News. Podcasts are available online at WLSAM.com.